Chapter 6, Endure Pain. Really early, Joliot opened his eyes, caught sight of his infocom on the night console and sleepily asked, "Infocom, what day is it?" "It is the fifth day in the fourth cycle of 2050," the device replied, and Kako sighed. He put on fresh clothes and stripped off his bed. The male took the dirty clothes out of the room with him, as there was a flap on the wall in the hallway where they could be thrown in. Later, a cleaning crew would come to inspect the rooms and replace the bedding if necessary. At the end of the corridor was the bathroom, where Joliot wanted to freshen up. He entered the room and it got automatically brightly lit. The door closed behind him and locked automatically. Kakodaz stood in front of a sink and looked in the mirror. "Damn handsome," Yuremia had called him. That almost felt like a medal. Somewhere, though, an inner dread arose in him as he thought about how she might be doing and whether she had told the other people about their conversation yesterday. Could she really just forget him again? Could he forget her? Could it be that she really meant what she said? He wondered as he left the bathroom to go to the breakfast room. Once there, he grabbed a tray from a stack and headed for the food counter. Chucky, who had been waitering tables at the buffet, stood behind the glassed-in counter and greeted him. "Zornis Joliot, how are you?" "Well, I've had better days. The day was long and the night was short. How was it for you?" "Can't complain. What can I do for you today?" "It's all delicious ready-made stuff," joked the other male. "Oh, a medium salad bowl will do for me, thank you," Kakodaz said, listlessly passing his tray. Chucky put a salad bowl on it before handing it back to Joliot and asking him afterwards if he was going to visit his parents today. The latter replied in the negative, "I'm meeting a good friend. I'll visit my parents next time."
"So which way are you going later?"
Chucky wanted to know.
"I'm going to Seligico."
"Why do you ask?"
"That's a good thing. I want to go to Gensler. We can go together with the brown one," Chucky was happy.
"The brown one? What is that?" asked Joliot, irritated. The other fox laughed and explained to him that it was a railroad line and that's what the capitals called it. In response, Kako nodded and said, "Yes, then we'll go together."
"When?"
"In a minute, my shift here will end. We'll meet up then. Then you won't have to wander around the big, bad city alone," Chucky suggested. Again, Kakodaz nodded and sat down at an empty table with his salad. There was not much going on, because most of the students had already left.
"I wonder how Yuremia was doing? Would she really keep her promise and remain friends with Joliot?" What was said yesterday echoed in his head. "Maybe I should actually emulate your father and go to my friend's house in Seligico to be gay with him."
Hadn't he, Kakodaz, just recently told Radovan that he didn't think anything of males? What would the leader think about him if his daughter told him about it? Joliot tried to think less about it, even though it was not easy for him. Soon he would take Amarok in his arms. After a long time, they would do something together again and have some time so that Joliot could become sure about everything. The fox tried to eat some of the salad, but even that was difficult for him, and because of all the thinking he could hardly get anything down. He moved the tray away from him and looked out the window. It was a bit strange here in Bulmer. On one side there were these huge, cloud-cutting skyscrapers and on the other side a large, idyllic area bordering the school. What a contrast. Who was the architect of this city? The same one who had donated that strange statue by the fountain? Kakodaz was completely absorbed when suddenly a voice called out, "So, we can leave.
Got off work."
"What,
yes.
We can," Joliot stammered in shock. He and Chucky made their way to the fast travel station. They walked across the empty campus and talked about the great architecture of the school building in Bulmer in general. Before they even got to the platform, Chucky said, "I noticed you were having some trouble getting around. It was also hard for me to ride the train alone for the first time. It gets better after the third or fourth time. I'll show you the way."
"Thanks.
It's good that I don't have to travel alone."
"Don't mention it.
We'll be riding for quite a while all the way to Gensler. I hope the track isn't too crowded."
"And then?"
"Well, then I'll get off and you continue on the same train to Nevi. From there you can either walk for an eternity, or change trains to Chutpri and from there continue to Seligico." In disbelief, Kakodaz looked at his counterpart. "Well, that's complicated.
But Chucky just grinned, "Well, sure, this is a very big country, too. You'll be fine."
"I hope so," Kako sighed as they got on a train and sat down. "How else did you get to your buddy in Seligico?"
"I was always picked up by him and his parents. At some point, my parents suddenly didn't want us to keep in touch. His family wasn't like that," Joliot explained. "I understand that very well. There was a time when Samoydans and Aramarans got along," Chucky said, offering to call his companion by his real name, Josiah.
Kakodaz smiled and Josiah continued, "These dumb ideas of segregation and purity. I think it's all bullshit. If we want to be friends with them, of course we can officially. But otherwise, everyone turns up their noses and doesn't want to be associated with the Samoydans.
Shit like that, really.
I see it similarly. I'm going there to see him, and I'm not going to be dissuaded by any inculcated morality," Kako said confidently, to which Josiah nodded and looked out the window.
"Everything passes by so quickly. Tempus fugit, that's what the Perdurizo always says. He's your teacher, so you've heard it from him many times.
I had him as a substitute in a course. Everything flees, even time. I'm almost 24 now, and you're already 16.
How old is this buddy of yours, if you don't mind me asking?"
"He's my age."
"Cool. And what do you do on your days off? I'm sure you guys drink too.
The three of us need to meet for a drink sometime, haha," amused Chucky.
"Yes, we'll do that sometime. But first get through the train ride," sighed his companion.
"So, the thing about the trains here is that," Josiah began and explained to Joliad many useful things about the travel times, the train connections and their colloquial names. Now and then they laughed out loud together, especially when they were talking about teachers.
Kakodaz decided to walk from Nevi to save himself from changing trains. The weather was quite pleasant, warm and sunny. He would manage the walk and, if necessary, ask someone for directions. He was not too shy anymore.
"Whatever you say. I'll see you at school later. I have to get out of here," Chucky said suddenly.
"Yeah, okay. I'll see you around then. Thanks again for your help," Joliad thanked him.
"Nehe Isin. Arrive safely and don't get lost.
Get help if you get stuck," Josiah called out as he walked to the door, waved, and then exited the train. Now Joliad still had 3 stations to go, so he still had some time. Thoughtfully, he looked around and noticed that a lot of Aramarans had gotten off at Breeklam. Now there were only a handful of people riding along as they sat silently staring into space. He realized that he and Josiah must have been the only ones talking to each other. This silence was strange and unusual. At the second-to-last station, Sestari, the train was empty. As far as Kakodaz remembered, however, this was a highly frequented route, just before the school holidays. Due to operational disruptions, this train ends in Sestari. Replacement transport can unfortunately not be offered to you at this time. Please also pay attention to the notices on the platforms, it suddenly shrilled from a loudspeaker and the male dog jumped up.
"What?"
he screamed in horror.
"What are you doing?"
"Thank you for your understanding and have a great day," it continued.
"Great!"
shouted Joliad angrily. "Why don't you take your beautiful day and shove it?
Why today of all days?
Stupid train. Nothing works here." Incensed, he left the fast travel station and walked upstairs until he reached the surface again. He had come this far, was glad to have almost made it, and then this. The fox cursed for a while before saying self-deprecatingly, "Oh, what the heck, I have time. I'll just walk for 3 days." Looking around, he noticed that this part of Aramaria was very quiet and green. The stone station seemingly rose out of the grass, like a randomly placed spot. If you wanted one, you had to like the other. Either there was the beautiful, untouched landscape, or steel, glass and concrete, which meant civilization and luxury. It was almost noon and Joliad's stomach was rumbling. If only he had at least eaten some of the salad. Why did he have to be so thoughtful? The sky was now cloudy and a low rumble of thunder could be heard. It sounded so far away that the male fox would not run the risk of getting wet. That would also have been fatal, because the way was long, and soaked he did not want to face Amarok and his family. When the fox seemed to have walked for an eternity, he finally reached the small house where Amarok and his parents lived together with their grandmother. Like Joliad and many other Aramarans, they led a simple and modest life. Everything they needed they could either grow themselves or get in a barter. Here they lived in the green, surrounded by fields and forests, so very different from Bolmer. The half-timbered house of the Wolf family looked rustic and quaint, almost a bit cute, and it corresponded to a type of construction that people on Gaja had sometimes used in the past. Amarok's parents had created a small front garden where many beautiful flowers grew. Their scent seemed to fill the whole air and Kakodaz's tension grew by the second. He had not seen his friend for a long time and had a lot to tell him. Carefully, he knocked on the large wooden door and it took a moment for it to open a small crack, allowing Amarok's mother to peek through. "Ah, Joliad," she called happily, "come in." "Hello, Amma," he rejoiced and was warmly embraced by the she-wolf and kissed again and again on the furry cheeks. "Left, right, left, right, oh, little one. I'm so glad you came to visit us again. How are you? What are you up to? And what are your parents doing?" she shot off as Kako sat down on an armchair in the living room. "Yes, everything is fine with us. I'm at the academy in Bolmer now," he began and couldn't finish at all. "Yes, your mother told me that. We talk on the phone now and then, secretly. But she hasn't been in touch for a while now either. I'll quickly make you a glass of milk and bring you cookies, Joliad." "You're too good to me, Amma," Kako grinned. Amarok's mother was a very nice she-wolf, she had a big heart, was never strict and could cook and bake irresistibly well. Joliad enjoyed his time here, back when he was almost a puppy. Even though a boy should not think about such things, it was already morally forbidden. Joliad sometimes wished Amma had adopted him as a child. It was not that he had a bad time at home in Lotto, on the contrary. However, something connected him with the wolf family, made him feel incredibly safe and comfortable here. Amma went to the kitchen and after a few moments returned with a plate of cookies and a large pitcher of steaming milk. "The way you like them, milk this morning." Joliad took a big gulp and ate one of the cookies on it. "Delicious as always," he grinned. "And," she then wanted to know, "you were in Bolmer, the capital, weren't you?" "Yes," the male fox smacked his lips. "So, what's it like there? Huge, isn't it? The neighbor has acquaintances there. Have you seen Carteron?" "Yes, but I wanted to tell you all about it together." "Oh, please forgive me, Joliad," the she-wolf apologized. "Amarok and Jack will be right back. It looked like it was going to rain and they wanted to lock the cattle in. Enna's taking a nap. Silly me, I'll have to squeeze you in a minute too. Sorry." Kakodaz smiled and said, "Don't worry, Amma. Glad I caught one of you, or I would have gotten wet with the thunderstorm that's about to start." He looked around the room sitting down after taking another sip and remarked, "Nothing has changed here. How long has it been since I've been here?" "That was almost a lifetime ago, kiddo. I don't know, 3 or 4 years. Too long, anyway. We've talked about you often," Amma reminded him, "and it's a long time, considering you used to be here almost every day, playing with Amarok." Joliad nodded thoughtfully, got up and went to the fireplace, on the mantelpiece of which was a photograph of him and his childhood friend. Amma followed him and smiled as she looked at the picture. But her smile turned to sadness as she explained, "Yes, all was well with the world then. That's when your parents and us were still getting along." "Oh, yes," nodded the male. "Things have changed in the last few years. A few days ago, my Jack and some of his nutcases launched another counterattack." "Counterattack?" asked Joliad, looking at the wolf mother in puzzlement. "Yes, just outside Seligico. Didn't you hear about that? That's where our self-appointed vigilantes tried to mess with the Arras again. Tell me what you want, but I think they're all nuts. Whether it's the Arras, or our people. Jack anyway. You know, nobody really knows what all this fighting is about," she spoke. "We're really happy here. Why can't males just drop this martial behavior and stay peaceful?" Now Joliad remembered that at the meeting Carteron had to leave very quickly. He was told that Samoydans had invaded a camp near Seligico. "And what happened?" he asked as he sat back down in the chair and drank the rest of the milk. "Well, what do you think, kid? The Aras have taken a few of us again, Ama told him and immediately apologized for the derogatory short form Ara, because after all Joliad was an Aramaran.
Taken? He inquired. I don't know what they're doing to our people, the mother wolf sighed. But so far, none of them have returned.
Suddenly, a rasping cough sounded, which startled Kako and he quickly turned around. He caught sight of Enna, Amarok's grandmother, suddenly standing in the doorway with a bottle of Copaic and clearing her throat loudly.
Yes, there were only a few dead this time, she spoke.
Oh Enna, don't always say things like that, Ama begged.
Why not?
Ruled the old woman, going limping and stooping heavily to her old armchair and slowly sitting down in it. The boy must know the ropes. He's not a puppy anymore, she stated and made a hand gesture signaling her daughter-in-law to bring glasses. So she did, and placed two jars on the table, the top of which was a thick slice of a tree.
Don't let them talk you into the world, young man, Enna lectured, you're old enough, and you're probably already pawing.
Enna! Exclaimed Ama peeked, giving her a nasty look. But the latter only laughed stertorously, filled the glasses, and made a toast, to youth, stupid, how it is kept and brought up. The old woman put on the glass and drank it down in one go.
Kako Daz followed suit and narrowed his eyes.
Man, that stuff was strong.
The old she-wolf didn't make a face at first, then laughed again, rasping loudly, and said, great stuff, isn't it? The fox did not manage more than a cramp nod and tried with all his might to suppress his cough. The drink seemed to want to burn itself in his throat and he had the impression that it was clearly stronger than the kind from the school festival. Surely Enna had distilled it herself again. Then the front door opened and heavy rain was heard. Joliad stood up and waited until Amarok and his father had taken off their rain jackets. Lightning flickered and traced the silhouettes of the two wolves.
Kako walked up to them and extended his hand to Jack.
Ah, my boy.
How are you doing?
The latter was pleased and gave him a firm handshake, which was followed by a hug. Then the fox caught sight of Amarok, who was wide-eyed, beaming and spreading his arms.
Hey, how are you Joliad?
Long time no see.
The two males embraced for a few seconds and Kakodaz's heart was beating much stronger now.
What a great feeling that was.
How much he had missed him.
Everything's fine so far, he replied curtly.
Come on, let's sit down, Jack said, and his wife smiled as she retrieved three additional glasses and another bottle of Copaic from the kitchen.
How's life, kiddo?
Or am I not even allowed to call you kiddo anymore?
Asked Jack.
He is 16 and already a grown man.
Isn't that right, Joliad?
Asked Ama.
Yes, that's right.
But you can say little guy if you want.
I don't mind.
Everyone calls me that, the fox said.
Well, get the jellump out.
Croaked Enna, pushing her glass to the center of the table. Ama poured the glasses full and admonished the old woman not to drink so much of the Copaic again. At the same time they all touched their glasses and Amarok followed a Samoyedan custom, which also pleased Joliad very much, by standing up and giving a toast, let's drink to a nice, rainy but comfortable afternoon and an even nicer evening. And let's wish that Aramarans and Samoydans everywhere in this world can do the same, together, someday. We know it can work. So, we hope that someday all the others will understand it too. Then he looked into Joliad's eyes, smiling, and he suddenly felt an incredibly strong urge to hug his friend, which would have looked funny now.
Damn.
How was he supposed to classify these feelings?
Since when was Amarok so eloquent?
Listen, listen. Praised Jack, and Ama grinned with satisfaction as they all raised their glasses and finished their drinks. They quickly set their glasses down on the table, rumbling, and Kako began to cough. This was followed by hearty laughter from all sides and Ama quickly fetched the fox a glass of water, which he immediately gulped hastily and sighed.
Honey, why don't you get us some bread and it will slide better, Jack asked.
As they sat together so comfortably, it quickly became night, as they told each other many stories from times past. Joliad also told about the school, Rado Pertoriza, his classmates and what they should learn there.
A spaceship?
Asked Enna.
Assembling their scrap metal.
What are they going to do with it?
Fuck off, huh?
That looks like them.
Don't hold it against her, Joliad, Ama placated, she's already got one in the jug.
I guess that's the only way they can go anymore, away from here, Jack reflected. They've lived in prosperity long enough, and eventually they'll take some of their people away to make the same mistakes there that they made here. Supposedly, there's already a prototype of their escape vehicle. Stop it with such topics. The mother wolf admonished crossly and annoyed. Do you forget that Joliad is also an Aramaran? It's all right, Amma, the fox said, standing up and speaking confidently, whatever happens. I hope that at least we who are here together will always remain friends, no matter how it all turns out between our people. You're just too sweet, Joliad, Amma gloated. Joe, I think so too. You're something, kid, Enna praised, and they all raised their glasses again, while Amarok grinned broadly and seemed to be very impressed. A few quiet conversations later, Amarok's mother said, Joliad, I'll go prepare your guest room. You know, the room next to Amarok's. Yes. Thank you, Amma, smiled the fox. Yeah, guys, I'm going to go to bed then, Jack said, looking over at Enna, who had already dozed off in the chair and was snoring. And I'll put the old lady on her mattress, too. She's as full as a bucket. Good night, boys. Good night, Jack, Kako said. Good night, father. I won't be so long either, promised his wolf friend. Oh, you go ahead, the latter's father countered, however. Take a day off tomorrow. Joliad isn't here that often. Stay up as long as you want. We'll see if I can do anything at all outside tomorrow. Well, sleep tight. You too, said the two males in turn. Amma came back to the living room and sat down at the table again. The second bottle of Kopeck was already empty, so she had brought a new one. Joliad, however, was not sure if the three of them would be able to finish it. Slowly, his lips stuck together and he felt that a slight spinning had begun in his head. Probably his friend Amarok was no different and he hoped he would soon have a moment alone with him. Amma filled three glasses and raised hers. So, you too. Much talk, but now it's my turn. I would say, here's to love, she spoke calmly, looking into the eyes of the two males in turn. Both of them did not quite understand how the wolf mother came up with it, and now looked at each other questioningly. Come on. What is it? Laughed Amma. Yes. Well? Here's to love, Joliad stammered, and Amarok just nodded quickly. Immediately after the three finished their drinks, Amma topped them off and asked with a grin, Do you think I'm stupid? What? No, why? Asked Amarok, startled, and you could clearly feel his respect for her. Do you think I don't know what's going on? What do you mean? Asked Kakodaz, confused. Then the she-wolf shook her head, took a sip, and said, I know what's going on with you. Again wolf and fox looked at each other. Joliad shrugged his shoulders and his friend couldn't shut his mouth. Surely neither of them had done anything wrong, right? Now then, Amma began, let's talk plainly, Joliad, I could hear your heart beating all the way into the living room when you took Amarok in your arms and before that when you looked at the picture on the mantelpiece. And your looks in Joliad's direction, Amarok. Anyone who couldn't read anything from that would have been very inattentive and stupid. Immediately they both lowered their heads and looked sad, but the she-wolf reassured them, Go on, have a drink and we'll talk about it. Amarok and Joliad each took a tentative sip, which amused Amma. She laughed out loud and her eyes watered, Ha ha ha, you should see yourselves now. Like two rainy pajakas. You can sleep with them in the stable then, because you fit in there very well right now. The young anthros were visibly embarrassed by the situation, and so they could not say anything in their defense. What was so bad about their behavior? I waited specifically until the three of us would be alone, although I'm sure your father wouldn't have minded you. Either, the she-wolf began. An uncomfortable pause arose, during which Joliad shivered. Why couldn't he just leave now? This was not how he had imagined at all. He couldn't leave, nor did he want to fight. He knew what was coming now. Amma had initiated his outing, although he was not actually ready for it. That we what? Asked Amarok anxiously, breaking the silence. Yes, my goodness you're gay. But we're not? Exclaimed Amarok, and by now Joliad had lowered his head again in embarrassment. Amma sighed loudly and shook her head, It's all right.
But you should know that loving the same sex is not outlawed among the Uras or among us. Do you think I didn't overhear your groping games from time to time back then? And Amarok, don't even get me started on the pictures with the male underwear or other oddities. By the gods! How embarrassing! For Joliad, this statement was a severe shock and he felt tears welling up in his eyes. What a lousy situation! How must Amarok feel now? He was her son and she had revealed intimate things about his masturbation practices. How did she even know about it? Again, the she-wolf took her glass and said in a firm voice, "Lift your heads." But the two males did not understand and did not move a bit. Joliad felt this inner pain. Somehow everything hurt him right now and he just wanted to sink. If he had only stayed in school. "Come on," she demanded calmly but firmly, and they both raised their heads again. "See," she praised, "there you go. Now join hands." "What?" asked Amarok, very close to howling. "Put your hands together on the table and hold each other so everyone can see it." If Amma hadn't been so calm, Joliad would have thought she was just trying to ridicule them. But there was not a hint of malice in her voice. Her friendly, demanding dominance was very impressive and typical of a Samoyedan mother. Even if Kako did not yet know what she intended, he felt that she did not mean what she demanded, on the contrary. Suddenly, Amarok carefully grabbed his mate's hand, shaking and holding it very tightly as he led them together across the table and placed it on the tree disc. Joliad was shocked at first, but didn't know what to do or say now. Surely the young wolf was no different, but he followed his mother's strange wish, as it was proper for a Samoyedan son. What kind of weird situation was this? Was it the alcohol? What actually happened here? Whatever it must have been, it meant a big, tangible change, that became clearer and clearer to Joliad the longer their hands lay there like that. Amma smiled gently and put her hand on the two males as she said, "Amarok, my son, I want you to go through life like this, upright, proud and self-possessed, without fear or regret. And Joliad, I want you to stand by my son and your love for him. If you love him, and you do, I can feel that, then help him to be upright, just as he should help you to be proud of your love. Be an example to others who don't believe that foxes and wolves can live together and love each other." Again the males looked at each other. But this time they began to smile and tears of joy ran down their faces. Then they both looked at the mother wolf and each received a gentle kiss on the forehead. Joliad didn't understand anything anymore, but Amma was so kind and caring that Amarok must be proud to have such a great mother. "I love you guys. And I want to be proud of you," she then said. "So never forget what I told you. Don't let it get you down and go your way. That's the only thing that matters. Joliad. You, Jack and I all want the same thing, namely, for Amarok to be happy. That's what it's all about." Then she drank the rest from her glass and said softly, "Oh yes, the room next to Amarok's is already occupied with junk, I'm afraid. So, if you don't mind, you can sleep with him, Joliad." "Really?" asked the fox in amazement. Amma had only made up the story about the room and had planned the togetherness of the two males throughout the evening. "Hey, you don't see each other every day. You're not puppies anymore and you're old enough. You're adults, after all. Go ahead and play your games, or whatever two males in love do. You'll be fine, take it easy," she said. Then she stood up and added with a smile, "Oh yes, but please keep it down. Cover your muzzles if it gets the better of you. You know what I mean." She winked at them and went up the wooden stairs to the bedroom. So now Joliad and Amarok sat there, holding hands and with a half-full bottle of Kopeck. "Your mother is really incredible. I had imagined it differently to reveal my affection to you," Kako remarked in surprise. "Oh yeah," the wolf confirmed, reaching for the bottle and tipping the glasses full again. "And I didn't really want anyone to know about my underwear magazines. But here's the thing. I'm not interested in fawning." Then they looked happily into each other's eyes and Amarok said tersely, "Here's to us." Kakodaz could hardly believe this situation and his luck. He was planning to come out as gay, and hadn't been remotely sure of Amarok's reaction. Now it turned out that the latter was also attracted to males. That was unbelievable. "I had no idea you liked males, Amarok," Joliad commented, but his friend just shrugged. "Neither did I at first," he said,
but I realized at some point that I was interested in things that just didn't have anything to do with femininity. I remembered the games we used to play. What can I say? I'm glad it's said now, and also that you seem to think so too. I think it's beautiful. And I think it's nice to be back here with you, the fox added, drinking his glass parallel to his friend. Afterwards, he shook himself and said he couldn't drink any more of the brew today. I'm tired, too, his friend agreed with him. Let's go upstairs. He got up first, still holding Joliad's hand, who willingly followed him up the stairs to his room. The fox's heart was beating very loudly and excitedly again, and he was already slightly dizzy from the alcohol, but he knew that Copake could not be the only reason for how he felt now. The males sat down on the bed, looked at each other and smiled. I really missed you, Joliad, Amarok commented. Me too. What a strange evening. I'm glad they know about how we feel now. No, I'm glad we finally know how we feel. It's a pity that I always have to go to this academy now. I would have liked to stay longer, after all that today. The whole thing there goes on for almost another year, Kakodaz explained sadly. The wolf took his friend's hand and placed it on his thigh while he stroked and looked at it. I'm also glad it said, even if it was embarrassing for me. Have you made any friends at the academy in that short time? Yes, I have. A vixen, for example. Her name is Eurimia and she's very nice. She's even the daughter of Cardaron, which I didn't know at first, Kakodaz explained. Now he also told his friend about the fact that they were together and originally wanted to stay that way. I slept with her, he confessed. Oh, the male wolf brought out and became thoughtful. Then there was a short pause, during which Joliad thought about why he was telling his friend this. But he decided to be honest from the beginning and not to keep secrets from Amarok. The latter then asked him, did you like it? In a way, yes. Well, it was just new, Joliad searched for the right words. Then why didn't you stay together? Again, they both pondered, and Amarok held his friend's hand very tightly, while the latter sighed loudly and took heart, but I'd rather be with you. Amarok, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I was thinking about you the whole train ride. I missed our time together and realized that I wanted nothing more than to see you again. I could have gone to my parents' farm, but I had to get to you to tell you how I feel. I have no idea where these feelings are coming from all of a sudden, but they're there, feeling right. Now the wolf looked at his counterpart and smiled timidly, but without saying anything. But he felt a warmth deep inside him, which was unspeakably beautiful. Even his excitement could not put this feeling into perspective. I have not forgotten our childhood together. I, Kako began again, when Amarok gently grabbed the back of his head with his free hand and stroked it. You don't have to say anything now, he whispered, for he had understood and Joliad had finally begun to say what he had been feeling all along. Yes, I must. I must finally have courage for my truth. I love you, Amarok. And all of a sudden the fox felt a very heavy burden fall from his shoulders. A knot burst and his heart threatened to burst. He was trembling, struggling with tears, but he took this great hurdle and overcame it. You are so sweet, fox. I love you too, Amarok said softly, guiding the fox's head to his until their chaps met, and they began to share a very romantic kiss. This lasted for what felt like an eternity and put them both equally in a state that could only be described as a trance. Eyes closed. The young hearts beating. The liberation of repressed feelings. This soft, warm and wet feeling on the lips, which was accompanied by the breath of the other, seemed to make eternity pass in a short moment. When the kiss ended, the wolf remarked, "What a strange feeling." "What do you mean?" asked Kakodaz. "Well, kissing a male. I mean, a girl in the neighborhood used to give me a smack. But that felt different," Amarok explained. Kakodaz grinned and said he had just felt that was strange, too, but very nice. It somehow feels special, different and right. It's a release I've always wanted to experience. And what is your body telling you? Is it good or bad to kiss a male? He then grinned. Then the wolf looked at him with a mischievous smile and said only, ask him yourself. He slowly guided the fox's hand to his crotch and laid it flat there. Joliad sensed that Amarok was aroused and immediately reached out tentatively while giving his friend another kiss. The latter sighed with relief.
Then they dropped sideways on the bed, kissing and caressing each other very excitedly. It was like before, when they both explored each other's bodies. Only now they were more mature, more adult, more experienced and in love. Joliad knelt trembling over Amarok and took off his shirt. Then he remembered a classmate musing in class about the muscles of the Samoydans. He excitedly stroked his friend all over his torso and looked at his soft, silver-gray fur. He said softly, "You are very beautiful, Amarok. Don't count your chickens before they hatch," he said mischievously, "but wait until you see the rest." Kakodaz took off his shirt as well, then opened the wolf's pants and pulled them off his legs. For a brief moment, he looked at the muscular body of his friend in its entirety, who now lay there clad only in his underpants. The fox lay down on the wolf so that he could kiss him again. When Amarok opened Joliad's pants and he pulled them down with his underpants, Kako could hear his friend's heart beating loud and fast. They were both very excited and wild about each other. Their breath trembled and the air seemed heated. "I'm a little scared, because I don't think this is going to be as easy as being each other's hand," the fox remarked, and Amarok responded quietly, "I'm scared too, Joliad." Then he calmed the male wolf and gently took his head between his hands. He lay on it and looked into a beautiful, anxious-looking wolf's face. Amarok looked into the dark blue eyes of his friend and immediately fell madly in love with them. They shone like deep blue sea, reflecting the glow of the candles Amma had placed. "You don't have to be afraid," the fox murmured lovingly. "I won't do anything you don't want me to. I promise. This is new to me, too. Let me help you." They first tentatively, then more and more confidently felt their way towards each other, and for the two friends began very intimate, tender moments, which they enjoyed excited and relieved at the same time. Now everything had been said, every burden had disappeared. Joliad was very happy that Amarok actually felt the same way as he did, and felt that emotions had also accumulated in the latter's mind that needed to be released. Again and again they interrupted their lovemaking, breathing heavily and looking lovingly at each other. "I can't stand it any longer, Joliad. Let's end it or I'll die," the wolf's voice rang out softly and breathlessly. With his tongue hanging out, Joliad agreed and nodded quickly. "Yes, please. I want the final," he pleaded. They all had time now, but the excitement meant that it wouldn't take them long now to finally experience their release. Loud clattering of the bed pierced the silence and mixed with the moans of the males, which in the end became in unison and signaled the joint achievement of climax. Amarok knelt behind Joliad, who was now on all fours, and held his hip. His heart was pounding loudly and he gasped for air. He slowly realized that he had just consummated real sex with his friend. It was a great feeling of oneness and affection. They had merged. Their bodies connected. Two souls united. When they had caught their breath, Amarok joked, "I guess the sheets need to go in the wash." He and Joliad lay down next to each other in relief and cuddled. The fox grinned contentedly and whispered, "Yes, but it was the most beautiful thing that ever happened to me. Did it hurt when I came from behind earlier?" The wolf then wanted to know. "Yeah, pretty much. Why didn't you say anything?" "Then I would have stopped," the male wolf spoke, startled, and now he had a guilty conscience. But Kako just smiled gently and reassured him, "That would have spoiled my fun, too. I like the gesture involved. Besides, I would endure any pain in the world for you, darling." "You don't have to, sweetie." "But I would, whenever it was necessary. Just to be with you," Joliad replied. Then he turned on his side and kissed his wolf, after that the wolf turned his body and pressed his butt against the other male's crotch. So he could feel the fox's manhood against his butt. "I love you, Amarok," Kakodaz whispered, caressing his friend's neck and gazing at its plush fur in love. "I love you too, Joliad," the wolf murmured. "Although we belong to very different races, I think we make a great couple. The others could copy us," said Kako, whereupon they both laughed softly and he gave his lover another kiss on the shoulder. "Thank you for bearing this pain of the first time for me, Joliad," Amarok whispered. "Well, in return, I'll take the active part next time. That has to be equal, right?" "Yes, it will take some getting over," the wolf admitted, stroking his hand over his partner's flanks. "But I'd like to feel you, too, of course." "Yes, we'll do that,"
his fox confirmed as their strokes slowed and they both fell asleep smiling contentedly. When Kakodaz opened his eyes, it had long since become bright. He had put his arm around Amarok, who was snoring softly. Joliad had a slight headache, because it must have been a little too much copaque. Carefully he took his arm aside and turned onto his back. Amarok turned sleepily to the other side and his lover looked into the innocent wolf's face. "How sweet you are when you sleep," he whispered, giving Amarok a gentle kiss on the lips, whereupon he slowly opened his eyes and smiled. "Hi, Kako," he purred.
"Good morning, honey. How are you?"
The wolf blinked slowly. "I have a slight headache," he murmured hoarsely.
"Me too.
What time is it?" asked Kako.
"I don't know. I don't even want to get up yet either. I'd rather sleep in bed with you all day."
As if on cue, both males peeked under the covers.
"Good thing that's just the morning bulge," Amarok grinned, grabbing his crotch and stretching.
"Yes, that's right. I have to go to the bathroom for little foxes," Joliad said, and they went to the bathroom together. There they washed and adjusted a few strands of fur, after which they went back into the room and very gently put each other's pants and shirts back on. They stroked and looked at each other attentively.
"Now in daylight you are even more beautiful, Joliad.
This soft, shiny fur," praised the wolf, which his friend returned very gladly. They kissed each other deeply and hugged tightly as Joliad whispered sadly, "Unfortunately, I have to go back to Bolmer today. Tomorrow it's already back to school." They sat down at the living room table, which had a small bowl of fruit, a couple of small loaves of bread, and a pitcher of milk for each of them.
"Your mother is so sweet. Do I deserve it?" asked Joliad sheepishly, catching sight of a folded piece of paper in the middle of the table.
Amarok picked it up and read from it, "Good morning, sweethearts. I hope you had a pleasant night together. I had a feeling you didn't fare too badly." Now they looked awkwardly into each other's eyes and the wolf read on, "Amarok, you've already found breakfast. Me and Jack are putting the cattle out to pasture and we're checking for storm damage. Enna's at the old folks club. I'll pick her up later. I don't want Joliad to forget that he has to go home today. If we don't see him again, give him our best regards. I talked to your father about you and Joliad. He was very happy when he found out that you want to be together, really. We love you and we'll always stand by you. And we love you too, Joliad. After all, you are our son-in-law now. Come home safe and study hard. If you need help, please contact us. We're all here for you. Always." "Well," Amarok then said, "that's just the way they are. It's nice that they accept our feelings for each other. They're great. And so are you," his friend said. Kakodaz was touched by the approval he and Amarok received from his parents. He would have loved to have such a great family.
"Yes, that's right. I have thought my father would have seen it differently, because of procreation, family tree and all."
Both sat down and ate. After a break, Joliad sadly said, "I don't even want to go to school anymore."
"But you have to, sweetie. It can't be helped. I mean, I don't know your education system, but there will be a reason why you have to spend the night there. Besides, it's too far to travel every day. After all, with the trains, there's always something."
"Yes, that's right. You have it better here, you don't have to go to school," Kako pointed out.
"That's true," Amarok agreed, "but you're also far smarter than me for that. You're a fox, after all."
Then Joliad looked at his friend uncomprehendingly and asked him how he could say such a thing, "Smarter, dumber. These are just trivialities. I love you, my darling, and I love you just the way you are. I don't think you're stupid. Besides, there's no one who can crack the infocom access as quickly as you can." "You said that sweetly," the wolf spoke and gave his partner a gentle kiss. This felt so normal, so natural, just as it seemed normal and natural for the sun to rise anew every day. It was wonderful and Amarok wished it could be like this every day. But he knew that there were still duties. To take his mind off it, he joked, "Well, no one cracks an infocom that fast. And why? Well, because I'm the best in my field. And it would even be self-destructive if I had to work with people who are below my level. That's why today I invited my highly esteemed colleague Joliad." At this, he fidgeted around,
raised his head exaggeratedly and made snobbish hand movements, which made Kako laugh.
"Yes, that's more like it," he agreed, this time giving his friend a kiss himself when, completely unexpectedly, a loud bell was heard, interrupting the two.
"Damn. It's already late and you have to get to the train. After all, you have to walk all the way to Tsustari," Amarok cringed.
"Is there still no train?" his friend wanted to know, and Amarok shook his head.
"Great. Yeah, let's get going so I can catch the last train tonight," Joliad recommended. So they hastily drank their milk and Amarok wrote another short message on the note.
"All right, let's go, sweetie," he said. As they made their way to Tsustari's fast travel station, the two chatted about the possible future.
"So when are you off next?" asked Amarok as he held his friend's hand and strolled with him.
"I don't know at all. We won't be able to relax very often, I guess. Besides, I have to check on my parents in between. There will be quite a bit of work piled up.
Let's go to them together sometime," the wolf suggested, but Kakodaz didn't know if that would be a good idea, since it was they, after all, who didn't want him to have contact with Amarok. And then there was the fact that he was gay, with a Samoyeden.
"Maybe they'll change their minds. They do love you. And I'm a part of you. Let's see what comes."
When they were close to Tsustari, Amarok suddenly said, "So, I may accompany you up to here, but no further."
"What, why not?"
asked Kakodaz without understanding.
"Well, that's the Jukanat hand really," he got a curt reply, and probed, "Yes, and?"
"Samoydans have not been allowed to enter any Jukanat other than Shutpri for a few days. Didn't you know that? Ever since our great vigilantes roughed up the Aras near Seligico. You know, my father and the others don't put up with everything. Maybe the Aramarans want to build a wall now. They're just all complete idiots."
"What?
I didn't know that at all. Didn't read anything else about it on the Infocom network either. How could this have passed me by?" asked Joliad.
"Well," his friend began, "it said that the network contains accurate, free, and uncensored information, but do you seriously believe that's the case?
Why would it be any different? Maybe there are problems updating messages, too."
Amarok was not a stupid wolf and noticed exactly what was going on around him. He knew that something was wrong and that the Aramarans had already kidnapped some of them during some confrontations with the wolves. The wolf did not trust the Aramaran government, or rather, he trusted it with everything.
"Joliad, there's something going on that you and I don't know about. The air tastes funny, everyone is acting strange. I think my father and his troops have gone off the deep end," Amarok explained his concern.
"That scares me, sweetie," spoke the fox. "Imagine if a wall were actually built. Would we see each other again?"
"Of course we will, my little fox," his friend reassured him, "we just have to wait and see. My father will already tell me the news. After all, they have listening facilities.
Please talk to him, Amarok. This has to come to an end. Let them make peace before someone does something stupid. Influence him. I don't know if he's going to take any heat for it. He can be very stubborn. But I'll try, I promise. Right now, though, you have to keep going, or you won't make it today."
"So we have to say goodbye here already?"
"Yes, unfortunately that's the way it is. I hope the situation will change at some point. Someone should give the Aro boss a piece of their mind," his friend grumbled.
"But we can buy Infocom," Kakodaz then began and was interrupted by Amarok.
"No, we Samoydans in Aramaria are not allowed to have Infocoms. That's another one of those laws against our freedom."
"This is unfair," shouted the fox angrily.
"But it's like this. Wolves are the unwanted, second class. After all Anthros are equal, but some are just more equal. We can only hope that everything will be different one day.
But that's not for you and me to decide," the wolf replied.
Finally, he added sadly, "So now it's goodbye, my little fox."
Then tears welled up in the fox's eyes and he said desperately, "I don't want to be separated from you anymore."
Now the wolf was also close to crying, and took his lover tightly in his arms with quivering lips as he said, "Everything will be all right, my darling. We'll see each other again soon. I love you. And now don't you cry, or I'll have to cry, too."
Kako Daz again had such an awfully big lump in his throat as he released the hug and gave Amarok a long French kiss, holding the latter's head.
I love you too, Amarok. Please wait for me to come back. I'll do what I can.
I'll do that, too.
Don't forget me, Joliad. If we love each other, we must bear this pain, as much as it torments us.
And now go, it is time, the wolf then spoke.
Kako Daz nodded and walked backwards a few more meters, waving at him and looking very sad. The parting hurt both males very much. He had never felt this incredible pain that the fox felt now, not even when he let Eurimia go, or when he had to leave home to go to the academy. He thought, what was the difference between Eurimia and Amarok? Yes, he was a male. His longtime friend. Eurimia was a vixen who made no secret of the fact that she was all about fun and sex. Kako did not want to leave Amarok alone, but he knew there were things that could not be changed today. What remained was a hope, the hope that circumstances would improve and they could be together again. His friend felt the same way. Finally, he didn't have to hide anything from his parents, because they now understood why he sometimes behaved differently. In fact, they were happy, encouraged him. It was a pity that they could only experience their new love for such a short time and were already separated again. As tears ran down the wolf's lips, he waved at Joliad and finally had to turn around to leave and go home alone. One day, Amarok and his father went to the bazaar of the city of Jeror to buy seeds and accessories for their pajakas. The place was always bustling and the air was filled with numerous conversations, haggling, and shouts from the market barkers. Wolves could be found here in Alsatians, which offered their wares in harmony side by side. The shepherds sold their homemade products, leather and metal goods, which were known far beyond the borders of Samoyeja for their quality and uniqueness.
I'm going to the seed dealer back there. You can look around a bit, just please don't go too far away in case I need you to help with the negotiations, Amarok, Jack said, and his son nodded. As they parted, Amarok walked past a few stalls with many leather straps, holsters, and hand weapons for sale. People were always polite to potential customers, bowing and praising the supposedly most beautiful pieces. The wolf had money with him, but no interest in buying, which he always announced with a reserved shake of the head. At the last stall in a row, metal jugs, necklaces and knives were on display and the male stopped to praise the vendor's items.
Very good work you are offering, he said, and the seller, a middle-aged Alsatian, bowed his thanks.
I am pleased, he said, that you like my work, young master. Look at these chains. Perfect for holding unruly pajakas. I guarantee you, no cattle will ever be able to break free of you. There have never been any complaints.
Thank you, Amarok just shook his head, but I don't want to buy anything. His counterpart noticed that the wolf was examining the hunting knives on display more closely, and skillfully tried to drum up business anyway.
You like these knives, I suppose, he said, making a presentational hand gesture over the wares.
Take one in your hand, feel its value.
Amarok glanced at him briefly and did as offered. He took a knife from the display and balanced it on one of his fingers.
It has remarkable balance.
Very good work. You obviously know your craft.
Thank you, young master, the dog said with a curtsy.
Call me Amarok, the wolf offered, causing the salesman's facial features to slip.
Oh, he marveled, if that's the way it is.
Forget that trash, Amarok. He quickly rummaged around under the table as the wolf boy looked questioningly.
Take this piece here. It's far better than anything I usually sell.
Good, Amarok said, taking the hunting knife from his hand. He looked at it balancing and was even more impressed by its goodness than by that of the other. The weapon had a brown wooden handle, which was covered with clear varnish and reflected the sunlight. Golden rivets held a broad, matte blade etched with the silhouette of a howling wolf's head. Below it were the initial C. G, in Latin letters.
C. G, the wolf asked.
Shenra Gages, the name of the smith, young master. It is customary in Alsatians for the maker to sign his best works.
And you are this Shenra Gages? The wolf wanted to know, still looking at the knife absorbedly.
That's right, young master, the dog spoke and bowed again.
It's beautiful and very detailed, his counterpart praised, then asked how much it cost.
The sheepdog didn't think twice and said Amarok could keep it.
You are giving me this good piece?
I can't possibly accept it,
Please, Amarok, take it. I have plenty of other knives.
Consider it a gift for a future client of my house, the dog asked, and Amarok nodded in irritation, then thanked him with a bow and was seen off by his counterpart. Goodbye, young master. May the gods bless you. Still puzzled, the wolf went to his father at the end of the bazaar, who was in the process of negotiating the delivery of seeds.
There you are. He rejoiced. Have you found something useful, my son?
No, father. I'm afraid there was nothing, he said, hiding the gift, which his father would not have accepted anyway.
Jack was very particular about such things. He always believed that everything had to be earned by oneself, and should not be dependent on the whim of others.
But since Alsatius also considered it an insult to refuse a gift, a revelation from Amarok would only have led to unnecessary discussions and perhaps quarrels, so he left it at that and kept silent. He first considered giving it to his friend, however, he quickly determined for himself that a weapon would certainly be nothing for a tender fox like Joliad, so he then decided to simply use it for decorative purposes.